People serve their dogs very faithfully. I have been on Park Avenue, one of the most expensive streets in New York City, just across from Central Park. And I've seen wealthy multi-millionaires coming out of their $50 million apartment complexes. And they have their dog. They have beautiful decorated leashes and collars. And as they're walking down Fifth Avenue, you know what the dog's going to do in due course of time. Well, the dog does it. Now, it's against the law to leave that. They may consider it dog prasad. It's against the law to leave that on the street. So I see these wealthy ladies in beautiful Italian garments. And men in very exquisite design clothes with fashionable shoes. They put cellophane paper around their cellophane glove around their hand, and they pick up the dog's remains, and then they have a little special bag that they put it in, and they put the plastic glove in the bag too, and then they walk around with it until they come to a city garbage disposal. Then they put it in. And I was thinking, these are multimillionaire CEOs, chief executive officers of corporations, and their wives, big politicians, and they're just the most humble, menial servants of dogs. That is really a menial servant when you're picking up their stool and carrying it around. And they were smiling while they were doing it. It was a joy. They were actually doing it out of love and affection. I didn't ask them that out of their affection for their dog, that stool probably smelled like sandalwood oil to them. So people are serving dogs. But traditionally, the quality of a dog that is most noted and respected is their loyalty to their master. Yes? There are stories, and they are true stories, of dogs that are willing to, without thinking twice, risk their lives or give their lives to save their masters. And actually, this is common in history. When a master takes care of a dog nicely, that dog is so loyal, so faithful, do anything for the master. So devotees understand that quality. We want to be like Krishna's dog. Under all circumstance, we want to remain loyal and faithful and take such a humble position in our loving service to Krishna. Real devotees do not want a big, high, great position. They want to always put Krishna and others in big, high, great positions. They simply want to be the faithful, like a dog for Krishna. Whatever you say, I am yours. That is a very, very high state of consciousness. And we may be far away, but that should be our aspiration. Not to become dogs, but to develop that quality. Does that answer the question?
Yes, Premnidhi Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, I have this problem, you could say it's my own problem. For any individual who's not that blessed by Krishna and he has to lead a life, both in materialistic life and has an inclination to lead a life in spiritual life as well. In material life, you can say that there are short-term goals in which he can have success. This success can be measured in terms of wealth, money, fame and the knowledge he gains. But we can all derive that this success is very short-term, in the sense that one has to forego these success as time comes, old age, disease and death. But if one has to pursue a goal in spiritual life, this is till the time of death. This is a very long-term goal for us. And we are very selfish in nature. So we also want to perceive the benefits of spiritual life. That is the love of God. So it is very natural when we don't perceive these benefits, frustration sets in. And now since the goal is very far off for us, we naturally get deviated from our spiritual life. So what one should do to be in the spiritual life and to pursue the highest goal of love of God?
The highest goal does not come at the time of death. The highest goal comes when we actually make the top priority of life the service of God in this life. We are not waiting for death to attain love of God. If you do not develop love of God in your life, then you will not have love of God at the time of death. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj told his classmates, now is the time to live a life of devotion. And his friends were only 5 years old. This is the right time. Prahlad Maharaj had pure ecstatic love of God as a small child. And he lived his whole life expressing that love of God in a spirit of compassion to others. That is what we are striving for. Love for Krishna is not far away. It is the closest thing to your heart. It is the very essence in the core of your heart. But our consciousness is just running so far away from the thing that is closest and nearest to us. Do you understand? So now is the time to begin to redirect our consciousness within, to our essence, to our eternal spiritual nature. We cannot wait. If we waste our time, death will come. And it may come at any moment. It may come today or tomorrow. Everything is so uncertain in this world. If we haven't deeply realized the absolute truth, then the time of death will proclaim a great sorrowful failure of a human life. Yes? But if we pursue the goal of pure devotional service now, then we're already on the path of perfection. Srila Prabhupada told his devotees, because you're living a life of service to God and you're chanting the names of God, you are all liberated. The devotees were astounded. Because even though they were following the regulative principles, chanting the names of the Lord, serving the Lord, reading the scriptures, they understood we have so much envy and pride and greed and lust within our hearts. Why is our Guru Maharaj saying that we're liberated now? Prabhupada said, you are liberated because you're acting, you're living like liberated souls by following these principles. You just haven't yet realized your liberated state. So if we just follow the principles that Srila Prabhupada taught us, we're actually living in a liberated state. And by living in that state, gradually, we realize our liberated condition. And that is the perfection of life. Does that answer your question? Thank you.
Just one relevant question is here. Maharaj, we are giving a lot of time to chant Hare Krishna, reading Bhagavad Gita, visiting temple for festivals on a regular basis, and we feel that we are not doing justice to our studies or our profession. So how to resolve this conflict?
We have an intelligence. The function of the intelligence is to discern what is the best way to balance our life in such a way that we are doing the optimum service to the Supreme Lord. Arjuna was a warrior. When the battle of Kurukshetra began, he just didn't sit on the sidelines chanting Hare Krishna. He heard from Krishna attentively, but then he went and performed his duty. So we must coordinate our duties in such a way that we're actually performing the greatest service. So if you are a student and you are chanting the holy names and striving to be a devotee and doing miserable in your studies, will that glorify Krishna? People will look at you and say and think that he is evidence that anybody who chants the name of God becomes a useless fool. Right? What other students are going to want to chant the holy names and take to a life of Dharma if they see that those who are doing it are lazy in their studies and failing? If you want to glorify God, chant attentively. Live purely. And through executing your duties as a student, the best you possibly can, you can glorify Krishna. You can attract people to Krishna. There has been devotees of the congregation of this temple who chanting very, very faithfully, living pure, exemplary spiritual lives, ranked number one in their whole college in their final exams. And when they were asked, how did you do so well? They said, because my mind is so clear from chanting the holy names, and my life is so clear by living morally, and because I received the mercy of Krishna. And so many people hearing that and seeing that became so impressed that they themselves wanted to understand what is Krishna consciousness. That's preaching. That's service to society. We have here Srinathji Prabhu. He's an industrialist. He's been chanting 16 rounds of the Maha Mantra, reading Srimad Bhagavatam every day, following the four regulative principles, since he first met Srila Prabhupada in the early 1970s. He's given millions of dollars for the welfare of the world by uplifting their consciousness. Next month, in New York City, he's going to be speaking to very high-ranked chief executive officers and very high officers of corporations and politicians, telling them about the ethics, the morality, spiritual ethics, spiritual morality of business and politics. And they're coming to hear him. Why? Because he's such a successful industrialist. That type of people won't come to hear myself or Gauranga Prabhu or Gaurgopal Prabhu. But they will come to hear Sri Natsi because of his success, because of his responsibility and his occupation. And so much he's doing. So whatever profession we perform, here we have Mahaprabhu. Since 1979, he's been following these principles of Krishna consciousness. He's a high court advocate, an attorney. And when he performs his work, you have to stay out of his way. He's very powerful and very, very fixed in his consciousness. And this brings credit and glory to Krishna consciousness, because he's doing his work for Krishna. If you're a student, you should do your work for Krishna. If you do anything for Krishna, you should do it to the best possible quality that you can. Otherwise, why even do it at all? Why not perform your studies as a service to Krishna? The more you learn, the more you could use in his service. So do it first class. It's your offering to Krishna. That is real intelligence. Nowhere does Gita say, think of me and be lazy in your prescribed duties. Think of me, chant my names, remember me, and perform your prescribed duties perfectly to your capacity for my satisfaction. That is Bhagavad Gita. So if you're a student, try to be the top student of your class, not for ego and prestige, but for the glory of the Supreme Lord, to attract all other students to chant the holy name.
Hare Krishna. Very interesting question. I tell a lot of lies, and I do it because I don't have the strength to submit. So, and many times I say lies because I don't want to hurt the person. And I have sometimes told a lie thinking that I will solve some problem. And many times I have tried to tell my mind to stop this habit, but I have found myself frustrated in all my attempts. So can you give us some tips on how I can overcome this habit? And sometimes I may have spoken lies to devotees also. So what are the consequences of this and how to overcome this habit?
This question can be answered from various levels of truth. From the highest level, if you think you're this body, is that true or false? What do you all say? How many believe that that's false? How many believe that it's true that I am this body? Yes, thank you. He's a very honest person. So if we think we're this body and we're not this body, then essentially the basic foundational premise of everything we do and say is wrong. Just like in mathematics, if you have a wrong premise, then everything that comes out from that premise is going to be wrong, is it not? If I say that 2 plus 2 is 8, then from that equation, all other equations are going to be wrong that develop from the original. Yes? So factually, if we think that I am this body, these things in this world are mine and yours, then from the highest level of truth, everything you speak in your life is a lie. Haribo. Now that's from the spiritual point of view. From the relativistic moral point of view, then on this level of illusion, if I speak actually according to what has really taken place, that is honesty. And if I make something up for my own particular purposes, that is a lie. Yes? When you live according to the absolute truth, then all relative truths are automatically in perfect order. So our main concern is that we are speaking the truth and living according to the truth. Our Guru Maharaj gave an example that a gang of thieves rob a bank and they take the money back to their headquarters and they say, now let us all be honest and divide the money honestly. Now, amongst themselves, they're being honest. But ultimately, the whole thing is dishonest. So if we do not understand the true self and our relationship with God and God's relationship with all living beings, then our whole life is, from the spiritual point of view, a lie. And everything we speak and everything we do from that point is a lie. Are you able to understand this subtle point? So we want to give up lying on every level. If on the day-to-day moralistic level, if we can't give up lying, then how are we going to give up lying on the absolute level? Therefore, the scriptures teach us that you have to come to the mode of goodness before you can transcend the modes of material nature. Before you can actually enter into the absolute truth, you have to come to the point of living in this world in a truthful way. That is the mode of goodness. But we don't want to stay there. From that point of goodness, of honesty, of humility, we want to go beyond, to transcend and enter into the absolute truth. Do you follow? Generally, we lie because of false ego. What is the use of deceiving? So we should be aware that Krishna's watching, Krishna's hearing. I cannot deceive him. I should be honest. To tell lie is a sinful activity. According to the particular circumstance, determines the degree of the sinful activity. According to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the first qualification of a real devotee is Sharalata, which means simplicity. Simplicity means to be honest, not to have hidden agendas, not to be concerned with deceiving people for our own purposes. Why should we live by penny-wise, pounds-foolish psychology? To get a little popularity or to get a little out of a jam today, I'll create an environment within my consciousness that's full of pollution that will cause me terrible, terrible harm in the future. Why? An intelligent person speaks and acts in such a way that they will have good fruits in the future of life. An ignorant person acts in such a way that I'll get what I want now without considering the future, not only in this life, but in future lives. There are subtle and gross examples of this everywhere. I'll give you a terribly gross example. A most beautiful woman comes before you, and she has AIDS and hepatitis C and venereal disease. Huh? You've heard of all these things. And you know. And she comes and says, "Let us enjoy." From the sensual, materialistic point of view, you can have the best night of your life with her. Now, what fool would do that? He knows, I'll have the most enjoyable night, maybe the most enjoyable week, living with this beautiful mistress. But in the future, I'm going to suffer miserably and die young. Now, which one of you would do that? This is just common sense. We should be thinking in terms of the future, not just the immediate situation. So why should we be dishonest? Why should we lie in such a way to serve my selfish immediate interests that may harm someone else, when in the future I'm going to suffer? There is Shreyas and Preyas. The animals live by the principle, what feels good now, do it. Have you heard this psychology in human civilization? That is the motto of the young generation. If it feels good, do it. Arrivo. I see on these hoardings people smoking the cigarettes. What is it called? The cigarettes? In India? Willis. Ah, yes, yes. And sometimes you see very sophisticated men and very beautiful women smoking their cigarettes. And people look and see, I want to be like that. And then on the cigarettes it says, if you smoke this, you will die. In so many words. If you, the Surgeon General of the United States says that smoking cigarettes is injurious to your health. On some it says it could create lung cancer and heart disease and emphysema and so many things. And yet millions of young people are looking at the billboards and going, phew, phew. And you ask them, why are you smoking that cigarette? Don't you know that tens and millions of people every year are dying due to smoking cigarettes? Why are you smoking that cigarette? And they say, because it's cool, man. And people are popular. It's popular to be cool. And someone will offer you a cigarette. Say, I don't smoke. Ah, look at, he doesn't smoke, huh? All right, I'll smoke. But then you become addicted. Give me another cigarette. I need another. Then you start dying. Is that intelligent? But yet here in India, I see very nice, sophisticated, cultured, so-called ladies. I saw in a park, men and women. One of the most bizarre romances I've ever seen. I just saw this in Bombay in a park where a boy and a girl, your age, they were looking at each other's eyes with such intoxication. And as they were doing it, they were both lighting the other one's cigarette. Have you ever seen that? This is some kind of very new age love of romantic exchange. They're killing each other. I will kill you and you will kill me. That's what love is about. But why? We should look ahead in the future. We should do what is good for our health. Physically, spiritually. That is intelligence. So why should we lie? For some petty little benefit now, we condition ourselves and incriminate ourselves in falsities. And ultimately, good people will never be able to put their trust in us if we're lying. And what is a greater satisfaction than being trusted? We see billionaires who've cheated and lied, and they have all this money, but they have no trust, no integrity. Nobody likes them. They envy them. With all their billions of dollars, they could not purchase one person's trust. What is the use of all that money? Integrity. Gaining the trust and the faith and the respect, the honest respect of others, is a great accomplishment in this world. Far greater than big, big bank accounts. It brings more fulfillment to the heart. And honesty is a springboard by which we can come into the realm of the absolute truth through the chanting of the holy name. Should I continue on this question? I was recently talking to a very high-level American businessman and he was telling me what has happened to the consciousness of the American people. You know what happened to Enron Corporation? And what was that other corporation? WorldCom? These are multi-billion dollar companies. And the high officers are so highly paid with so much power. And they were lying and cheating to the extent that tens, if not hundreds of thousands, of their simple, loyal employees who have given the best years of their lives were going to be left with nothing. Yes? Just to fill the already fat bank accounts of these men. It was devastating. People are wondering, What is the use of having so much power, so much control, so much wealth, if you're such insensitive, cruel-hearted, lying cheaters? Where is the ethics in business? Where is the honesty in business? It's going on all over the world. That became big news because it was on such a massive, large scale that affected so many people. Penny wise, pounds foolish. All your karma must come back to you. Where is this basic ethic in people's lives? What kind of world is it where no one could trust another person's word? There are four virtues: cleanliness, austerity, compassion, and truthfulness. In the age of Kali, compassion, cleanliness, and austerity are practically non-existent. The last leg of religion that exists is truthfulness. If we lose that, civilization is doomed. How could we have any happiness in life if we can't trust each other? And how can you trust a person who lies and deceives you for personal selfish interests? Srila Prabhupada explains that Krishna consciousness is based on the two principles, love and trust. One of the most essential and greatest contributions that all of us could make to this world is living with such integrity and honesty that we can create unity through living in such a way that people can trust us. People can have faith in us. If you're not a part of the solution, you are part of the problem. So on every level, we should give up this dishonesty and lying. Be honest, be straightforward, and live. Live in pursuance of the highest truth. And follow the principles of relative truth to progress toward that highest truth. Does that answer the question? I spoke a lot because this is a very important subject for young people to understand today.
Yes, now we can have a question from the audience. Yes, please.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Yeah. Yes.
Maharaj, in the initial stages of devotional services, there is a kind of shyness that arises in one's mind, whether what the people would think about him is taken up devotional services, or what his friends or relatives would say about him. So how could we get rid of this shyness? Please guide me.
Most important consideration is, according to the time, place, and circumstance, how we could best progress in Krishna consciousness. We must be tactful. If honesty doesn't mean being foolish, honesty means pursuing the truth without deceiving others. So, if you're telling parents everything about what we are doing every day in Krishna consciousness, if that is going to create great opposition, you don't have to lie to them, but you tell them what will best encourage them to accept your Krishna consciousness. You understand? Essentially, we should be committed, not on the basis of popular opinion or our peers' approval. We should be committed on the basis of what is the truth. The example of all these Western devotees, including myself, do you know what it did to our parents when we took to the life of a spiritual path which was completely foreign and mysterious and incomprehensible to them? Do you understand? It was very difficult. They never heard the name Krishna before. They considered deities to be graven idols. They never saw a shaved head or a dhoti before. They think, what are you wearing? Dress. When I was young, I had long hair. My parents said, why don't you cut your hair? Why don't you cut your hair? But I never cut my hair. Then I came home with a shaved head. They said, why don't you grow your hair? I said, you told me for so many years to cut my hair, I cut it. They said, but not like that. So it's incomprehensible to the Western people. But because we understood it was such a high and sublime truth, we gave our life to it. And ultimately, practically every devotee's parents became favorable and appreciative by seeing the qualities of their child. So, generally people in this world, because they're conditioned to a materialistic mentality, when they see you taking seriously the path of bhakti, or the path of dharma, they become very fearful because it's strange to them. It's not normal within this materialistic society. Yes? For all of you, it's much simpler. Because your parents know who Krishna is. They see sadhus all over the place. They see deities in temples. But still, it's very difficult for them to accept that their children are following it so seriously. Yes? They think that if you do this, you will give up your family. You will starve to death. They'll never see you again. But if you show them that through your Krishna consciousness, you're more respectful, you're living by higher morals and ethics, you're more devoted to whatever you're doing because you're doing it for God, you're living with a greater degree of compassion to human society, then gradually they will respect you, they will understand you, and they will honor you. We have a devotee. There are so many examples. Our beloved devotee, Radha Gopinath Prabhu. Do you know him? He joined this movement and many of his relatives were very confused. What are you doing? But then after he became such a saintly person and they saw his qualities and the work he was doing for society, He was invited to the town that he was brought up, and the whole town came out to have a celebration to honor him. They were offering him garlands. They were washing his feet. They were giving him gift. They were speaking his praises. They were proudly proclaiming that from our town has come a great saint. Another one of our devotees, father, mother, and uncle, were absolutely disgusted and angry that he became a Hare Krishna devotee. Very angry. Very depressed. The mother was crying and crying and crying. And the father was so angry. And the uncle was just on the warpath. A couple years later, the uncle had cancer. He called this devotee to his bedside. The devotee taught him how to chant the holy names, taught him the Bhagavad Gita. His uncle was chanting all day long and listening to Bhagavad Gita. I went to visit him on his deathbed. His uncle was crying. He said, "My nephew is the only person in the whole family I trust. He has saved my life. I am his disciple." And now the parents are so proud of him. So yes, parents and relatives may be a little confused. Any time a child changes the direction of life, they become very startled and confused. But if you live really Krishna conscious life with integrity, honest morality, ethics, and real compassion to others, and faith and love for God, then in due course of time, they will all honor you, respect you, trust you. And not only that, they will know that you are liberating them from birth and death by your devotion. And every parent practically realizes and appreciates that in due course of time. So why should we cheat our parents and cheat our relatives of that great spiritual salvation that they will gain by our devotion just to not make them feel bad today? Huh? We should know that. We're doing the ultimate good for them, whether they know it or not, and in due course they will understand if you do it right. In my own family, my brothers are businessmen, musicians, and everything, but my parents see that I respect them more than all others. In fact, my mother once told me, "Of all my children, I'm so proud of you. You have the best friends, you're doing the best work." But for the first few years, they were crying out of shame due to my lifestyle. But now, they came to Radha Gopinath and they were dancing in jubilation in front of the deities. So why should we deprive them of that great treasure simply out of false sentiment? Does that answer your question? So you can be shy. That is not a problem. But do not deviate from the path of pure devotional service. And be honest with them in a respectful and palatable way. What I found in my life is the less I preached to my parents, the more my parents liked Krishna. Preach through your qualities. And by your qualities, they will understand the philosophy and accept it. But if you just say, I remember when I first came home from India, they were watching television. I said, this television is Maya. They said, what is Maya? I said, illusion. They just... I was just crushing their heart with everything I was saying. And then I became tolerant. Whatever you are, I respect you. And I'm grateful for all you've done for me and all you're doing for me. And this is what I am. And when I stop trying to push it down their throats, as they say, and I just respected them and I was kind to them, but I was living without compromise in my own life, then gradually they respected, they accepted, and ultimately they became devotees. They started chanting on malas. Is that possible for 60-year-old American upper middle class business people? Yes. Because when Krishna sees that you are sincere and you're not willing to deviate, Krishna will bless your desire by blessing the hearts of all your loved ones. So be respectful, be honest, be faithful to the true path of bhakti, and be patient, and all your desires will be fulfilled in an incredible and miraculous way.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I have a question.
Hare Krishna. So we have a reporter from Samna and several Marathi newspapers, Mrs. Harshada Ved Pata. We would like to welcome her to our program here. Hari Bol! So she has requested to ask these one or two questions for the newspaper. As you mentioned that Krishna lives in our heart, so when the question arises of our own survival, sometimes we have to hurt, intentionally or unintentionally, people. Sometimes we have to hurt people. So is it that I am hurting Krishna?
It depends how you hurt people. Arjuna was shooting arrows in the Kurus. Was that hurting the Kurus? Who asked the question? I'm asking you a question, oh most respectable reporter. Can we give her a microphone, please? Reporters like to ask questions, but I like to ask reporters questions.
Could you just repeat your question?
Yes. Arjuna, you know Bhagavad Gita, Mahabharata? Arjuna was shooting arrows in Karna's body. Yes, and in other Kurus. Did that hurt the Kurus? His arrows?
One can say that he was hurting at the situation or the circumstances, whatever was the given by the karma.
That I understand, but answer my question. Did it hurt the Kurus when Arjuna shot the arrows in their bodies?
I don't think so. I'm not sure, but I think...
Well, if you were a Kuru and Arjuna shot an arrow in your body, do you think it would hurt?
Actually, if you say physically, it will hurt, but mentally my intention or my concentration will be somewhere else. So it won't hurt that way. But after the war or after that particular day got over, it might hurt.
Bhima was smashing Kurus on the head with his club. Do you think it hurt them?
No, in this case, I don't think so. If you're coming out with a second...
Matsuji, the Kurus were in terrible pain. According to Mahabharata, they were weeping and screaming in pain when the arrows of Arjuna was in their bodies. Now, did that hurt Krishna?
Yeah, because...
It did not hurt Krishna. Krishna told him to do it. I'll give you another example. If a doctor shoots a needle or pierces a boil, does that hurt? Yes, it hurts. But he's doing it for the good of you. Therefore, it's pleasing to Krishna that he's doing that. Similarly, Arjuna, he was shooting the Kurus to cleanse the world of Adharma in a genuine way. So that means it was out of compassion. It wasn't out of anger and greed and envy and pride. Arjuna was shooting out of compassion and love of God. So that was pleasing to Krishna. A doctor will hurt you out of compassion. That means it's pleasing to Krishna. Sometimes your parents may give you a certain punishment. A child is in pain because it's ultimately for the good of the child, Krishna is pleased with that. So sometimes we hurt people, but not to hurt them. Just like, for instance, I talked about my parents. When I took to the path of bhakti, I hurt their hearts miserably. But I was doing it for a noble cause, for a cause that was most beneficial to them. And now their hearts are swelling with joy and pride that I'm a devotee of Krishna. So do you think my hurting them was hurting Krishna or pleasing to Krishna? It depends on the cause. If you hurt someone in such a way that is not beneficial to that person and not beneficial to your own integrity and spiritual progress, then that hurts Krishna very much. But if trying to help others and trying to live according to the truth ourselves, other people are hurt due to their own misconception, that is pleasing to Krishna. Do you know the story of Prahlad? Did Prahlad hurt his father? Yes! When Prahlad told his father that he was a devotee of Lord Vishnu, his father was in miserable pain. So much so, he tried to kill his son. And when his son wouldn't give up his devotion, his father was going totally mad. He was totally miserable. But in the end, his father got liberated by Prahlad's devotion. Now, do you think it hurt Krishna that Hiranyakashipu was in pain? No. Prahlad was living for the welfare of his father, for the welfare of human society, for the welfare of everyone. But due to his father's misconception, due to his ignorance, he was hurt. So when we hurt people due to their lack of knowledge, when we're really trying to do what's beneficial for them, that pleases Krishna. But when we hurt people for our own selfish interests, then that is painful to Krishna. Does that answer your question?
Very much.
And you also answered my question. Thank you.
Any question? Please bring the microphone. We have this boy here. Take the mic this way. Yes, please. No, behind you. You already asked a question. Yes.
Hari Bol Maharaj. My question is, the modern scientific theory says that you should believe what you see. But so, if we haven't seen God, soul, or life after death, so how is it? How can we believe in it? We haven't seen soul, life after death. So how can we believe in it?
Have you been to Australia?
Never.
Do you believe there's a place called Australia?
Yeah.
Then that means that you're not scientific? Why do you believe there's an Australia? You have not seen it, my friend. What is the answer?
Yeah.
Why do you believe that there is a place of Australia if you have not seen it?
But it's there. It's a theory and it's in the globe.
Huh?
It's a theory and it's in a globe, so...
Because you read about it in books?
Yeah, it's in geography.
And you heard about... You may have met people who have been there?
Yeah.
So you believe it?
Definitely.
But you haven't seen it?
No.
So you're a believer? Yes?
Yeah.
I believe. So similarly, we read about God in the Holy Scriptures. All the Holy Scriptures of the world, all the most pure-hearted, compassionate, saintly persons of all traditions and all history talk about how they have seen God. And so many people today are coming and telling us of their experiences and realizations with God. There's more information about God in books and amongst people than there are people who have been to Australia. Have you seen directly Mahatma Gandhi?
Never.
Do you believe that he is the father of India?
Yes.
Very well. .99% of the things that everybody believes is true, they have never personally experienced through sense perception. Yes?
Yes.
99% of the places in the world that you believe, historical incidents that you would believe, you have never seen. The sun, I can cover the sun planet with my thumb. Yes?
Yes.
Does that mean my thumb is the same size as the sun?
No.
How do you know? It's beyond your sense perception. It's so many millions of times bigger than the Earth, we learn it through the scientists who have done the research. We haven't seen it. How do you know who your father is? Were you there at the scene, at the time of conception, watching? You were there, but you weren't watching. How do you know who your father is? On the basis of faith. Yes?
Yes.
So everyone has faith. Everyone has faith on realities beyond sense perception, beyond our experiences. But there's reasonable, logical, scientific faith, and there is blind faith. So we should understand God through reasonable, logical, scientific, philosophical faith. And then our belief in God becomes the deepest, most profound reality of our lives. Krishna consciousness is a science. It is not a sectarian dogma. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Patience. Your sincere and earnest questions are really filling my heart with so much hope for the future of India and the future of the world. That such intelligent and sincere, highly qualified young people like yourselves are taking such a serious interest in the real welfare of humanity and the highest perfections of human life. I thank you very, very much.